Welcome to Upstate Carolina, which is South Carolina Linux Users Group. My name is Jace. I'll be leading the Bash shell scripting for newbies part 4 session. Before we get started, I'll go ahead and introduce some people. So we have 5 great people who have provided us with nibbles. Food. That should be roarous applause. Hooray for food.
Would you like that?
My name's Alan Valdwart, and I'm an old IT guy. I used to do, back in the day when Ucklug was really small, I was actually part of it. But then I got out of that to Solaris and Windows and, Unix administration work. I now work for Find Great People on the sales side, so I'm always looking out for companies that are looking to hire talent. So if you guys are any hiring managers or know of any, I'd love to talk to them. Two of our recruiters, John Tier, he's an old business intelligence developer from Milliken for a number of years. He's one of our recruiters. And Penn Sanders, who he can talk the talk, but he's a good recruiter as well. He's been with us a couple of years. But I'm the new guy. I've only been at the company for about 3 months, so it took me a while. But I just want to, I was talking to David Nally, and he said, hey, you buy Geek's Pizza, it makes him happy the same way. So hope you guys enjoy it. If you have anything, grab our business card on the table, and please take any pizza home, because I'm not going to take home. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. All right, so I guess I'll get started, unless we want to. Who's our guest? Okay, that's all right. I'll just go ahead and get started. All right, so Bash shell scripting part 4. I was looking over my previous things, and I noticed that I hadn't finished my fried bacon, but I prepared for, now we got to the third one. It's going to be a half-hour session, so you never know how far you're going to get. So I went ahead and I'm going to recap on, or go back to that stuff. So here's the shell script that I called Fry 4. Remember we were talking about frying bacon, that was session 2. And what we were doing was using shell scripts to fry bacon. So we got the, shebang bin bash, that indicates that this whole file is going to be executed by the bash shell. And so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to introduce sourcing. So you see normally here, I've got a file called fry.com in my directory, and I'll do a listing right quick. So I've got a fry.com, and it's a text file as well. If it were an executable file, I would, in my bash script, I would just execute it this way, right? So let me do that real quick. And I will execute my fry 4. Okay, first of all, I need to chmod it to give me execute permissions on that. And now, I'll try that again. Fry 4. All right, so you can see here, permission denied for fry.com. It also needs write permissions, or execute permissions. So I will chmod plus x fry.conf, and we'll run it again. All right, so it actually did run fry.com, but y'all don't know what that is, so I need to show you that though. Cat fry.com. Alright, so what we got here is just a, kind of a config file sort of format. Because it's going to be executed by the shell, we can use the same sort of things that the shell uses. We've got the pound sign for comment, we've got variables here that I created and assigned to them. And now here, let me introduce a new thing here called function. Now you're familiar, I'm sure, in other programming languages with what a function is. Does anyone need any explanation on what a function is?
Do you really?
Okay. So a function is something that you can call later as the or command in the shell script or in the shell itself. So what I've got here is I wrote down the three different ways you can use this, and you'll see different people use different formats in different shell scripts. So you see right here, to let you know that this is a function, they put the word function, fry underscore bacon, and then a brace. And then it ends with a brace. So this is the function of the fry bacon. Okay? Another way you might see it, which is my preferred way, is kind of a C way, C-like. You've got just the function name with the paren, and then the brace. And that indicates that this is a function. Now, some people like to have both of them, so that's why I put this one right here. Bash will understand both ways. And I think one was inherited from Born, and one was inherited from C Shell. One does one way, and one does the other. And I think it's the reason that Bash decided that they will allow both of these ways, and heck, we'll even allow the third way. So that's what that is. So fry bacon is now a function, and whenever I call fry bacon, it will do this right here. Echo. Y'all remember the numeric variables, right? You weren't here, were you? Okay, so from the command line, whenever I give a command and then it's whatever arguments, it enumerates those. The command itself is $0. The first parameter is $1, $2, $3, etc., etc., etc. In the same way, whenever you call a function, its parameters are 1, 2, and 3, and so on and so forth, and 0. So, if I were to execute this by itself, fry.conf, now I have a function called frybacon, fry underscore bacon. Wait a second. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. So, well, it's an exact formula. All right, so pay no attention to the man behind the screen. Let me show you this now.
What's the FI?
What's that?
In the function, what's the FI do?
If tests something and then it knows what to do in a block based on the then, else, elif,
it's like a loop in
the feed. So the feed is if in reverse. It's the end of the block of stuff that if does. Okay?
Okay.
So this is what, if this is true, then do this part. And then if it's not, drop out and go to the feed part. And act. Okay?
He is shell's version of then if.
Okay.
Great. Alright, so. Now, alright. So, whenever I run this program, try 4. Okay, it says fry bacon command I found also. Now, any idea why that is? The thing is that I ran this program by itself, and the config file doesn't really do anything. So it ran all this and just quit. Shell, whenever you call a program, launches a brand new shell and does that thing, and then comes back. Right? So it creates its own little environment, does it, gives you the output of whatever it does, and then just returns to you. Now, because I just ran it and there was no output, nothing happened. But then I tried to execute the function fry bacon. It doesn't know what that is because inside that little environment is where I defined what fry bacon is. So when I came back, that environment was gone, but nothing there. So what I need to do is... Give me a second here. I normally type on the word I keyboard. Alright. Well, that didn't do me any good.
You big dumb.
I'm not supposed to use this whenever I'm giving a presentation that's being scripted because then you see all these characters, you know, color characters and such. Yeah. All right, so we'll cat try four again. All right, now. So I changed it from actually executing fry.com to source. Now, so what does source do? Source actually runs the file but keeps it in its own environment instead of launching a brand new bound environment. It puts it within the environment of that script. Does that make sense? Any questions? All right, so let me run that again. And boom. All right, so now it didn't say what is this fry bacon thing, because I don't know what it is. It actually used the function that was in this file that I created. It used the variables that I created in that file as well and put them in their proper place. All right. So let me show the config file again. So you see here we've got from the three variables, the function. So it sourced it, puts it in the environment that's currently running, and then it sourced this file, then it ran fry bacon function. Number one, substituted here for meat, which is defined here, baconing. Two is put, and method is put in for two. Method is fry. Baconing method, fry. Baconing fry. And then the third is the adverb, which is right here, boldly. Boldly. Alright, so the output should be baconing fry boldly. Right. Doesn't make sense, but that's correct. Now, where you will see this normally, and let me mention too that I wrote down the two different ways you'll see it. Source fry.conf and dot fry.conf. They both mean source. It's two different names of the same program or same method or functionality sort of thing. Does that make sense? So you'll see some places it has source fry.conf and some people have the dot. Dot's shorter, so in Bash, Golf, Bot, Specs, you know. You just saved 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 strokes, right? But it's also, if you don't see it there, you know, for self-documentation purposes, you may miss it. And I think, you know, C Shell did one and Born Shell did the other, and Bash Incorporated plus them. So, yes?
If you wanted to save the output of that program, like if you had like some sort of cloud drop, so you could go back and see what the output was, how would you do that? Like, if you had it run repeatedly, if you wanted to, like, you know, keep a log of it or something like that.
So if I wanted to run this and capture the output,
yes,
so far, I would type it or catch it to out file. See, now, nothing appeared on the screen, right? But if I concatenate out file, then they can fry boldly. This is there.
But if you run it again, it's going to destroy that.
If I run the same thing again?
Use a single break.
If I run the same thing again, then it will overwrite it with baconing fry boldly.
Yeah, so you could throw around and pipe output from your own program just like you would in LS.
Right. Yeah, and I say pipe it. I didn't mean pipe. I mean redirect. So it's just kind of an error. It puts it into this file, right? Now, conversely, thanks for going that way. Conversely, you can, in programs that take standard in, you can send it with the less than character. So you can, I can put out file less than fry4 if fry4 understood, you know, input, which it doesn't. It would understand what to do with this as a filter. Any questions on that? I wasn't going to get to that yet, but you see it now, so it's out there.
Is there a way to see the output and keep it in a file at the same time?
See.
Why, yes, there is. Let's say, for example, I want to use a standard function called t.
Is that? That's the formatted, right?
And what that does, it shows me the output, and then I can also cat out file. Now, okay, I'm just waving my hands there, so let me do, give it a number. All right, so I did it to the output. So let me put cat output file 3. Yes, baconing fry only. And just so that, yeah. All right. Now, does anyone understand what's going on here? T is a program that, you know, the pipe here, so the output, the standard out from fry4 goes to the standard input of T, right? You remember from last month, everyone was here, and I explained this, right?
Yeah, okay.
So what T does, it T's it, you know, in this sort of thing, you know. It makes the standard output keep going. And it also keeps the standard output in a file that you give it, right? That's what T does. So it not only puts it in the standard out, it also puts it into a file called an out file. Does that make sense? Everybody understand T now? Isn't that a cool program? So you could, you know, if you pipe a bunch of stuff together and you T each step, you know, output from, you know, fry 3, output from fry 4, output from fry 5, you know, sort of thing. You could find out where, you know, something messes up. You know. All right, so that is what I didn't finish 2 months ago. So now I'm going to go in here to Fry Shakespeare. Spell it right. Okay. All right, so I didn't finish. I didn't pick up from. Anyone have any questions on what I've discussed so far? Yes, Kevin.
Well, okay,
the newbie, Kevin. Yes.
Real briefly, the fry is in quotes. You have the variables 1 and 3 are in brackets. And the reason you do that is because.
Yeah, if you remember from last month and the month before that,
yeah.
Kevin, who was not here, there are different ways of, you can, whenever you reference a variable, you can do it with the dollar sign and its name, or if there's like several of them that have a similar name and you're not sure which one it's going to use, you can use braces around the actual name itself, which is why I did it here, because if I didn't do it here, it would be looking for the variable 1-ing, which doesn't exist, and so it would put a blank there, or maybe a wheel or something like that. I think they changed recently to do the other way around.
But do what the other way?
Nevertheless,
around?
Huh?
Do what the other way around?
Well, let's see. Let me do an example. I'm going to echo.
Some people would consider using the curly braces like that as a best practice of shell script.
Best practice, yes.
Because for the very reason that he mentions is that it forces you to visually, well, two things. One, it tells the shell exactly what you want. And it makes it obvious to the reader what it's supposed to be doing.
So you see here that I did an echo of path, an echo of brace path.
Mm-hmm.
It outputted the same thing, because it's the same variable. But now, if I do an echo pathing, there is a variable called pathing. But if I echo pathing, it'll do pathing. Okay? Make sense? Yeah, and you know, there's no space here, so it concatenated that string together with that.
So you're forcing the shell to treat path as the variable name, and everything else is extraneous text.
Now, if I seem to think that it used to be the other way around, where it would automatically say, okay, that's a variable, so I'm going to... No, maybe
not. So.
Maybe not. Okay, maybe it's just me. Probably just me. Okay, so, any other questions? Kevin, you had something about quoting?
Well, you had quotes of pride.
Is that right? If I re-discuss that, everybody?
Go for it.
All right. That's the enthusiasm I'm looking for. All right.
Woo.
Sam, do you know all this stuff?
Whoops.
You're in a different group.
I am in a different group. You're right.
Sam, that is too. So.
I'm fine. Thank you.
All right, so that's not what you were talking about. Oh, this is what you were talking about right here? Okay. I put quotes around this. Double quotes mean to interpret what's inside. Did I say it right? Interpret what is inside of you. So otherwise, all right, so you see the braces. That's what we just discussed. Here, adverb, there's only one variable that's even... got any of those letters, so there's no conflict, right? And there's only one method. I put quotes around this just to show that you can have, and understand too, I'm doing this in multiple different ways, because you'll see all the different ways. It puts it in quotes, and what this will do is the shell will interpret what's inside the quotation marks and put it in that place, right? In this case, method is just one word, so this doesn't really do anything for me. Putting it in quotes doesn't really do anything. But now you see here,
no, you don't. Actually, there is one thing it does, although it may not make a difference to you, and that forces everything, the value of that variable, to be treated as a single argument, which in some cases may not make a difference. But in some cases will, because if the method translates to something with a space in the middle, then bacon would get four arguments instead of three, because the shell is going to treat the result as two words, but because it's quoted, it will always be treated as one string, regardless of what's inside, whether there are spaces or tabs or anything else.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Now, what you'll see here is because I did echo and space, and then this, and space, and then this, and tab, and this. Now, the shell will drop, you know, it'll care about spaces. Spaces are just a delimiter. It's, and I say space, I mean white space. So a tab, space, new line, if it's continued. So what will happen here is the shell will say, okay, I'm going to call an echo command with this parameter, and that parameter. And so what echo did was it just, since it got this as its first parameter, and it didn't get this, it just put this in here, then it put a space because I'm looking for the next parameter. This, put it right there, one space, and another space. Is that, or the last argument. Does that make sense? Now, had I put all of this in quotation marks, all those spaces would be there because this then would be one argument, like you said. As it is now, one, two, three arguments. Or if one, two, and three become a dog. So if I had it in quotes, then all these spaces would show up there. Mm-hmm. All right? Moving on. Not boring anybody? Not boring myself? Okay. Now, picking up where I left off last month, I had gotten to Fry 3, and Fry 4 in Frying Shakespeare is this little shell script here. I had talked about, if you remember last month, the cut command. So cuts, and what does cut do? Who remembers from last month? Who was here from last month? You were here. Who else? You were here. Oh, were y'all here? Well, I was here, and I remember what it was. In fact, I've got it right here. How about I do that? Okay, there you go. Cut.
Unless you break it back. You get a cookie.
Right. Cut takes the output or the file and breaks it up however you want to. By default, the delimiter. The delimiter is a space, is that right?
I think so.
I'm not sure. But anyway, so last month we had the etc password file, which is a colon separated file. And so we decided that we wanted the delimiter to be colon. And I'm giving you the mnemonics that I remember by. The dash D means delimiter. So cut dash D, delimiter is colon. So anytime it sees a colon in this standard in, it's going to regard that as a new
field.
Thank you. So dash F is field number. So I'm looking for field number 7, which in this particular case is all the shell names, default shell for each user, right? That might sort by just unique, by just work out. Okay, so you remember I did cut. Cut also takes different, doesn't have to do it by the dash D, the delimiter way, which is the way that I use it mostly. There's also the dash C column or dash C character, however you want to think of it, character or column, column number. And so if I were to do a dash C column number 20, everything in column 20 and then like dash 40. So everything in column 20 to 40, if it were, let's say if it were a not a comma separated file, but if it were what do you call it?
Fixed record.
Fixed record format file. Thank you. I'm glad you're here tonight. Where each record had a fixed length, and so you knew that column 20 was the start of the elephant ear column or something like that, and it ends at column 40. And you could do a dash C 20 dash 40, and when I say dash, I mean the minus sign. And then it would output those columns or those characters or those bytes. All right? So that's what cut does. That was last month. This month, we're going to talk about its PAL. Paste, cut and paste, right? Paste. So what does paste do? It takes standard in, it takes files and puts line one from one file, line one from second file, line two from the third, line one from third file, takes all the line ones, puts them all on one line, and then it goes to line two of the first file, second, third, fourth file, puts them all on the same line, third, blah, 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 until, you know, one runs out, and then it's going to go with the rest of them, and that's what. When you give a dash, that means standard in, okay? So what I'm going to do here, and I should go to this file. All right, so let me introduce the. So what this is going to do, go to NL, Jason. Okay, NL. The NL program is to give, to number the lines of the file. That's how I remember. Number lines of Hamlet 3.1, right? So whenever I do a NL of Hamlet 3.1, it gives me line. Let me just do it without. See, there's the speech in Act 3, Scene 1, thank you, of Hamlet. And that's just the file itself. Whenever I do it with NL, it gets the line numbers. There are 35 lines in this file. And it gave me, you know, the line number and two spaces, and then the line. All right? Now, you see in my commented code there, that if you give cat a dash n option, it'll do the same thing. Cat with dash n is number the lines. So if you're doing cat and you do a couple things with cat, you want to give it a dash n and it'll put the line number there. All right, so what I'm going to do is paste that and, or pipe it to paste. So the standard out here that we just got is going to be sent to the standard end of paste, which is going to put right here, and then it's also going to take the standard end of, or it's going to take this file, etc/password, right? So what should happen then is the first line of etc/password and the first line of Hamlet Act 3 Scene 1 with its numbered lines will be put on line 1. The same with line 2 of here and the second line of this, right? Does that make sense, everybody? So if I execute this, there. So you see, like the last line of etc/password is the UCP user, Unix Compile System, blah blah blah. They put a tab character. They put the new line that NL gave me. The line number that NL gave me, not new line. It's number line. It gave me the line number, and then the 25th line of Hamlet 3.1. Right. Now there were more lines in Hamlet. So it printed after the tab character, the number line, and then the rest of it. Right?
Where did the tab character originate?
That is paste's default delimiter. So you can give paste an option of what other kind of character you want to separate it with.
And
I had that written out.
Or whatever it is.
What's that?
That's your delimiter.
That's the default delimiter. And let me just do. Let's just do the head. You remember from last month, head just gives me the first 10 lines, unless I tell otherwise. So the first line is at blah, 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 tab, line 1. To be or not to be, that is the question, colon, right? Line 2, use Gravahi, blah, 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 then false is in shell, line tab character, number of line 2, whether it is nowhere in mind to suffer, all right? Any questions so far? Am I over-explaining this? Okay. I fear that I'm over-explaining sometimes. Because I tend to do that in general. All right, so that was frag 4. Yeah. What are we doing on time? All right, I guess that's time. Where's our guest? There he is. Would you like to introduce our guest, please?
Sure.
Thank you all.
Everyone, this is Skip in here, and he is from Protect Point, and Protect Point is a medium network security partner. We utilize Protect Point because they have a 24/7 NOC down in Marissa, down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and they have a great network security device. They do intrusion protection and prevention, and they're just a great resource for us. So we utilize that, and Skip is going to give a presentation on that device and how they use it with that device. So, Skip.
Thank you.
While he's going, does anyone have any questions on what I discussed? Well, keep socket to me while he's setting up.
You know how with like apt get or merge, when you put it in the command, it shows that little process more, but it doesn't keep entering down lines. How is it updating output without going down the line each time?
It's doing a carriage return and carriage.
I did a program that had to keep updating, and I ended up just going.
It is either doing a carriage return character, or it's doing a backspace character.
But I thought AppKit was Python. But in Shell, you can do that with an echo.
\\d for backspace and \\r.
Also, there's like a minus and for no, don't put a trailing line.
Exactly. So there's a argument that tells the dump to not put a new line when you could explicitly say that character. Or, as part of your end up.
So you want to do a spin or something?
Yeah, it was basically a progress meter for a
transfer that.
But you want to progress me.
Real view, like a hash?
If you want to get a bar, you could just use the echo with no new line, and then it would add to the existing one. And that could give you an echo with a new line at the end. Get it that way, as opposed to a spinner.
I did not.
I think that's the problem with the last one.
Good to hear, right?
Good to hear.
Any other questions?
Well, while he's looking at that, as Rebecca was sharing with you, I'm Skip St. Pierre. I'm a solutions sales engineer. I'm not the technical systems engineer that sits behind the system and monitors all the time. I've got smarter people than myself that do that, that I rely on. Unfortunately, I didn't bring any of those folks with me today, but I'll be happy to provide you as much information as I can as we'll go from there. As Rebecca had mentioned, for TechPoint, we focus on a managed network security solution, really around intelligence in both technology and the people that sit behind the technology. We're based out of our corporate headquarters is based out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We have a secondary facility as well, and a third facility coming on site here soon. So we have failover and high availability for our clients. Probably never heard of TechPoint before. That's because we're a managed solution service of technology, network security. Within that, that could be different things to different people. One could be firewall, typically comes to mind. Another one is intrusion detection and prevention. Is anybody here probably doing a firewall, I would imagine, at some point? What about intrusion detection and prevention? Good. A lot of folks are led to believe that the firewall is sufficient. What I'm going to share with you is that it's not the case. It's so much not the case that every time that we go in line in an environment, we'll find the client won't let us leave with a solution. Because now they've realized, what I was not educated on before, I am now, and I can't do without it. Okay, so you're coming up soon here?
Before I get into it, I want to talk a little bit about technology. And I asked the question, everybody knows what a firewall is. Again, remember, I'm kind of like a sales engineer. Okay, that's saying I'm a little bit technical. A buddy of mine just recently called me and said, hey, this Windows system at home, and keep getting these viruses and stuff. Would you come by and take a look at my firewall? Tell me what you think. Said it was Windows. My Redmond firewall that we installed for it. I take it everybody is in IT in some form or fashion, is that correct? You're on the executive business side, whichever one is more on the technical side. So you often relate to that. How tough is your job? By the way, some Redmond jokes, by the way, I'm from Florida.
was born and raised there. So I think I'm going to hear that loud. You know, you think your job's tough. I know it is in IT. These folks, these four guys are out at Orlando International Airport installing some pipes along the premises. Baby alligator?
Baby?
Someone's pet, I suppose. You think your job is tough, these four guys? Oh, hey, the same guys. Think they're having some bad luck? The 89 snakes that they found in that pipe. Can you kind of relate that to your jobs? Okay? By the way, I mean, again, in Florida, it's quite common. Notice the name on the book. Temporary insanity 2.
That was a good placement.
There's one. You know what happened to one. And by the way, before soccer mom that was driving here, you notice keeping her head out to scream. That's what happened to temporary insanity number one. This poor guy. Again, you think your job is tough? Trust me, there's other people out there that have worse than you. Okay. In other words, I was holding the sign for you. You can read my sign. Okay. What about compliancy? You've got compliance issues, sometimes dealing with a house of cards. Okay, moving on, and by the way, you might see me skip a slide or two here and there. I'll try to keep it moving. Some information I'm going to share, I know it's a high level, and I'll get to meet what I believe you're going to want to know, you're going to want to see. Typically, businesses are dealing with a finite number of resources, right? We're dealing with not enough time in the day, too many projects, too many fires that are coming up, priorities constantly shifting. We're going to also be talking about threat in the landscape. What is really a breach? Does it really mean anything to your company if information is lost, if data is hacked, and the costs associated with that? How do you approach that typically? Is it layered security, or do we just throw a firewall out there? And again, we see it time and time again, the confidence there, the comfort level with a firewall. So we'll talk more about that. Then we'll talk about checkpoint managed security solution. In dealing with a finite number of resources, we're talking really about money, right? Time, and the people resources, right? So do we have enough time? Do we have enough money? Do we have the budget? And do we have the resources? Does everybody feel that they have a great, large budget, and they have plenty of resources, and they get all the projects done on time? I don't usually get a yes.
Every day.
Cold smoke and mirrors. And the belief is it won't happen to me. I'm okay, I've got the firewall in place. Again, by the way, I'm not putting on a firewall, I'm just talking about where it fits, more as it relates to layered security. And what I'll get into here is automated systems, the threat, the vulnerabilities, the threat in the landscape. How often are systems hacked, or attacked, I should say? Does anybody have an idea of, someone has a web server in here? You know how often you're attacked?
I just basically shut the login.
Keep going.
Because the logging is just insane.
Yeah. And
you can't sometimes several times a second.
Yeah. I put a unit online at my house over the weekend. I'm being serious here. I put a Linksys WRP 400 wireless with the IDS in line to it. And I put it on, and within 5 minutes, I had 8 hits. It's my computer system at home. I'm on broadband. I'm keeping it capable of them. So why are they attacking me? I'll talk about that. Anybody aware of the Honeyman project?
Yes.
Good. Going to my point, segue here, You know, they put a in and out in 15 seconds, excuse me, a web server out, okay, within 15 seconds. The worm actually hit it in 60 seconds. It was compromised in 15 minutes. That was a challenge. That was to see how quickly someone, really it's not someone, it's something, right, the botnet, hacked into the system. And I'll talk again how it relates into a firewall. Anyone familiar with the storm worm? Basically, distributed peer-to-peer based command and control. Everyone's heard of peer-to-peer. I'm sure no one uses peer-to-peer. Okay. But I'm sure you've heard of it. Polymorphic worms, AV signatures, antivirus signatures. And what I'm kind of painting the picture here is the threats that continue to come in every second, every minute, thousands of times, hundreds of thousands of times a day. And don't take my word for it. I'm going to actually, by the end here, I'm going to log into our operations center, and I'm going to show you how the alerts come through and how we manage them. And just when you think things are starting to settle down, the attacks are going to maybe start going away, well, we're wrong. Continues. Folks out there becoming bolder, organized, more advanced technology, technological advances, automating the attacks that are coming through. Massive web attacks, 500,000 pages affected. I won't read all this to you. I'll just point out these names here. ZDNet, US MRED, USA Today, Walmart, TJ Maxx. We have a new slide in here of TJ Maxx. We'll talk about that. The firewall. What does the firewall do? It sits out there as a means to keep out unwanted instances. Yeah, I say that instances because anytime something attaches itself, it's an instance. It's trying to attach itself to port 80, which is all standard. It's, by the way, if you've got a port, anybody have port 80 open? Okay. You know, we all have had port 80 open, right? You can browse the web. That is a door, okay? And we like to think that our firewall is going to protect us and guard that door. Okay, by the way, how many ports are there?
65.
Do you have a key to protect every one of those doors? It's not, you can't manage it. Okay, and oftentimes you'll leave one of those doors open, and trust me, folks, do. Again, the point being is just not firewalls enough, the antivirus is not enough, intrusion detection, okay? Intrusion detection, I'll skip some of this, this is just getting some repetitive. By the way, if you want me to stomp on something, just let me know. This really talks about the zombie threat, botnets getting part of the kill. Everyone familiar with a botnet?
Okay. Explain it just in case.
You know, with a botnet.
Because I don't, actually.
and I might not know.
Well, yeah, I know what
IRC, okay, Internet Relay Chat.
Yes.
Okay. It was a means to where the hackers really first started getting a strong foothold and able to taking over chat rooms, sharing credit card information, capturing credit card information, selling social security numbers, private confidential information. Well, these botnets have even become more technical in terms of being able to replicate themselves and infect multiple and thousands of computer systems. I believe, what was it, Code Red was kind of one of the big ones out there that kept infecting all the computer systems out there. Anybody else have anything to add on to the botnet?
So it is a botnet
that's really good. You get systems that are infected with a virus, the virus takes over, but it, the hackers will have a command system that can instruct
all these infected computers on what they want to do. So that's how they get the distributed denial of service or any kind of thing. So they'll, the virus in, you know, Joe Blow's computer, your neighbor, will go attack some other website and try to infect it, or take over, inject the virus into another computer and make it part of that whole. And there are consortiums that will sell the service of sending spam from their botnet,
right,
or whatever else you want done.
So now they're using your machine to spread the spam. They're using your CPU cycles, using your resources, stealing your information.
Yeah, they can come.
Most of the machine builders don't even come from compromised machines anymore. Like in Asia, where you buy, you know, full Windows for $2 on the street, but then it's, they come free rootkit. So you go, hey, you got my copy of Windows, and as soon as you install it, they'll say, get another one into their box. And as they print their books, a small internal data center in Atlanta, and he literally blocks Asia from their network. That's all.
I have another slide deck over here that I actually just recently grabbed from one of the research firms on internet statistics. And Asia, by far, is far superior in internet connectivity and in growth. Just people that are just plugging into the internet each day. And thus, where the attacks are coming from, the majority of the attacks are coming from Asia, actually, right?
And you look at that with the system for Hong Kong and South Korea, just blow away what's available in the U.S. That's what the home user, and you've got 100 megabits down to the home site.
Yep.
Fiber. And we'll see fiber for another 10, 15 years.
I don't know about that. One of the biggest problems now happens to be that Asia's on IPv6 and we're not.
Have I kind of driven home the point in regards to security issues? Because what I'd like to do, I'll hear some more of these remarks. You heard about this
one? Why are our products?
It was only me. $45 million.
And we kind of talked about this a little bit ago. Liz, hackers are accessing networks to hijack, right? We talked about bandwidth, CPU cycles, disk space. I can't tell you the number of times that we bring a new client in. And when we put this unit in line, and I'll call it the solution in line, what they realize, they've been breached. And all of a sudden, they realize, we had one customer recently just regained over half terabyte of disk storage. Why? Because it was being used for peer-to-peer file sharing. So everything from, yes, you guessed it, you know, the pornography to the copyrighted music, the movies, they had no idea. No idea. So I think we've got enough on threats real and a little bit about cost and financial impact. And one of the things that I usually like to remind us is in the technical side is there really is a significant cost. An example, TJ Maxx. Okay. So when you're looking at layer security, well, does that mean that you just have a firewall in place? It shouldn't mean that you have a firewall in place, any virus in place, the spam filtering in place, and then intrusion detection and prevention in place. Whether you're doing the intrusion detection prevention yourself, which I'll talk about some advantages, but actually disadvantages. Advantages is you only manage it. I think that's kind of the disadvantage as well. So what it really costs the company, okay, the data breach. And I'm not looking for information to come back to you because I deal with clients every day and the stories that you hear are just unbelievable. In the instance of TJ Maxx, to where they feel they are secure, and we, along with our partner, convinced them to go in line with the solution, only to find out that they have been breached with SQL injection. Okay? Where all of a sudden now, all that data is now going outbound. So where they thought the firewall was in place, which it was, okay, the encapsulated or encrypted packet that slipped through the firewall is now penetrated the SQL injection packet and is now spewing the information outbound. So I've got a website that I can share with anybody who's interested. You might know it off the top of your head. Just recently learned about it. But it's actually public record information showing these companies where they've had data losses, where they've had to publicly report, and yes, Max was on there, along with a lot of other companies. Everybody here of SAIC?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. They're on the list. There's another university that I forget the name of that just came online that just had a report, data breach. When I say data breach, we're talking social security numbers. We're talking your student record file information. We're talking medical history. Okay. That's the reason why SAR-MAIN, HIPAA, all these various appliances have come out and put in place. Because we finally have gotten tired as a community being escalated. Identity theft. Okay. Have you, anyone in here have ever typed their social security number on the internet? I guarantee you few of us have. Now we look down in the bottom right hand corner, we look for that key symbol or lock symbol saying that it's secure. Does that really mean it's secure?
Just means the transmission.
Exactly. It just means the transmission from the point A to point B. What's happening on the other side? It's in the database. Who owns that database? Okay. Are they protected? Do they have a firewall? So what if they have a firewall? You know, how are they protecting that information? So as a consumer, I think about that every time I enter my credit card number. Let me tell you, PayPal has become my best friend. Okay. When I pay for anything these days, because it is encrypted, it is. Thus, it is still, to your point, it's encrypted along the way. But they have a new function, new feature. Get off track here. I just recently learned about where it allows you to create a secure card. One instance transaction that simulates a MasterCard. Okay? I think that's great. I'm just wondering if someone will figure that out and start hacking into that. The virtual smart card piece. It's interesting. But I just started using that recently. So going back, getting back on track, there is a cost associated with data loss. It really depends on us, how far and how much of a risk we're willing to take. Is it just a small amount of data that I could potentially get out, or is it my entire database? And it's just not with information traveling over the network, it's data backup tapes. You know, how often I walk into data centers and backup tapes sitting up there. So there's layered security that needs to be put in place, both the network and entire data centers. You're talking about businesses that start off small. I guess we'd all agree the demand for bandwidth is not decreasing. Okay. Of course, media wants that. As they say, you give me more disk space, I'll use it. Give me more bandwidth, I'll use it. Well, so are the other folks on the other side of the fence. But as the business grows, you have to keep up with the demand with technology, infrastructure, and security. Again, talking about security, no single solution would be 100% effective. Let me get into right now. Is that Neon and TechPoint are offering as an intelligent network security solution. Okay. We're giving, we're providing a real-time monitor service solution. Okay. Someone is monitoring the traffic within your network 24/7. So going back, you've got a firewall, you've got your antivirus, you've got your spam filter, which by the way, I can provide these capabilities as well. but really I'm focusing on the intrusion detection prevention, because that's where it seems like we see the most traction out there, an area that's not often looked at. We're actually monitoring, providing real-time alert status to what's going on. We're not looking at your data. Okay? We're looking for the signatures. Are you familiar with Snort? Okay. And that's my only tie into Linux. Sorry. with Snort, it is part of our core foundation, the signature from Snort. And now Bleeding Edge. And what we do is we constantly manage and write new signatures as part of our monitoring service and solution. But as you can see, starting down at the bottom of the gentleman, the customer's network, we're actually through a secure VPN, okay, to a device that we have in your network, okay? I talk about the device just briefly. It is part of the entire solution. Remember, I talked about intelligence in technology. It's a Linux box. Okay, and it is running specific services within the box that are monitoring the traffic for the signatures and reporting back to our security operations center. Our agents are actually sitting on the other side. Okay. And the analysts are looking at a queue. And in this queue, they're looking at alerts, much like you see service alerts coming across. And I'm not familiar with the Linux side, but the Windows side, looking at event records and service events that come up. And based upon a client's profile, there's typically three levels. One is, just send me an email, I'll get it in the morning, tell me what it was, okay? Default is anything at a high level, go ahead and block the IP address. Okay. Anybody familiar with PureGuard? What is it? PureGuard? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
PureGuard? Okay. Awesome little product for the home user. Okay. Think of PureGuard. Basically, what it's doing is monitoring the traffic that's hitting your IP address. And it's trying to get into the various ports. And I can, on a click, tell it, block that. I never want to see it again. Okay. And I'll block that.
That's not PureGuard. PureGuard is something else.
What's that?
PureGuard is like queues and PvP and don't particularly care for somebody like Interpol. It like blocks any IP that belongs to like Interpol.
Well, that's because it's got its default list, but I can add to the list, right?
Oh, well, I've never played with something like this.
Okay.
A lot of the Linux plugins were just like, yeah, important here, like 300,000.
Yeah. But I was playing with it over the weekend, and that's the only reason I mentioned it. It allowed me to add IP addresses because I was looking at what's coming back and forth as an average user. Okay, I do these with David Letterman, these stupid head tricks. I do the stupid user tricks, right? I'll crash the system. Okay, I'll download something, all of a sudden, it won't boot. Reformat, control it, reformat. But I was able to, with Peer Guardian, right click and say, block this, add it to my list, and block it at that point. But I was trying to build a relation, correlation there where our analysts are sitting there watching what's coming in against your network. Not just what's coming in, it's what's going out, okay? We have healthcare, big medical customers, we have universities, go figure, peer-to-peer. We don't actually block the traffic. We block the IPs if it's a threat. Our most common is Asia. We're constantly blocking. But again, depending on the customer's profile, we'll turn around and we'll say, okay, this is a SQL injection. We've been seeing these lately. There's an infected machine. I've got a call. I'm going to wake you up, pull you out of bed, and let you know. Why? Because you're a credit card services company. And that's the last thing that you want is data going out. We have actually a lot of card service companies, clients as well. Everyone following me so far, really what Checkpoint is offering. Okay? Again, it's an intelligent network security solution. We are SAS 70 Type 2 audit compliant. We go through those audits once a year, actually twice a year, with Type 2. Everything that we do has to be set by those standards in order to be able to offer the services. I believe
on?
Says the landscape one.
One.
Okay.
Should ask that. Thank you. We also, aside from the managed intrusion detection, we also offer the managed firewalls for some of the smaller clients. But if someone has a PIX in place, we're going to leave that in place. We're going to go right behind the firewall, let you take the brunt of the hit, and we'll filter at that point, monitor and manage. We also do content filtering, VPN traffic analyzer, high availability, content filtering, virus protection, spam eradication. Again, a lot of these pieces and parts you probably already doing. Okay, some you might be able to manage pretty well. What we're finding is a lot of clients are looking at, okay, I don't have a significant investment in the fixed firewall. It's easier for me to go with a Medion, allow a Medion to provide this managed service for me, allow me to focus on higher priority projects. There's a cost associated with that. There's a return on investment. Speaking with a services, card services company, speaking with the developer, he actually is also the IT guy. And he says, I finally got my boss to understand. My time's more valuable coding, developing, than it is trying to worry about helping Betty, you know, print a Word document. So there is a cost associated with that. And when I share that with you, because we always need to keep that in mind, while it's cool to tinker with the technology, which, by the way, I'm going to show you that you can with ours, but it's important that if there's something that we can allow someone with, that's in that business, our security analyst, that's all they live and breathe, signatures. Okay. Anybody care about learning about signatures? Anybody care about looking at the latest threats? You probably, by the way, probably won't know about it until 2 weeks from now. We know it immediately because that's the network we're in, that's our core business. Again, I mentioned the box for a second. It is a Linux-based. Do not worry about the port count. We provide a solution that will scale to the environment. Okay, so we'll go in behind a firewall on a monitored segment, and we'll monitor that for the alerts. Again, having that real-time security operations center. There, in a second, I'm going to get into... customer portal, okay? You actually have access to the portal, okay? In the portal, I can see where the threats are going on. Everyone's familiar with SANS?
SANS.org?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry, Jerry, no. So SANS.org, and we're constantly monitoring real-time threats and proactive communications out to the world. I can drill down into this and look at the threats that that we're watching and that we're blocking. I can actually act on global blocks. Looking at some of the details here, the IIS command, you can really see it out here, not really. PHP attacks. Anybody running PHP? No. PHP exploits. So you can see by country where they're coming from.
Right.
Yeah. Look at how much red we see.
You can see, I think, the number one tech service for web service.
Is it?
That theory, PHP 6 is supposed to fix the calls that is PHP, where even something like, you know, a checkbox, a radio checkbox, can be totally retried from PHP. In theory, a lot of that stuff you take to the 8.6, whatever decade that ends up being. So
it's job. Somebody lays say fantastic?
No.
Sorry.
Fantastic. Banyan vibes, baby. I need my shark mail.
IOs, too aggressive. We can look at the health of the box, if you will. We can go into in-depth reporting, current and previous jobs that have been
transactions. I don't know if you can really see this that well up there. I can set the rules as far as the app by application, right? What I want to allow by IP address. So there's some IP addresses that you don't want to have RDP enabled, right? WDIV, BNZ. Basically is looking for that threat that is a known threat, or even the unknown threat that we're looking for specific patterns and what's trying to get in or trying to get out and sending data out. So as we write these signatures, we were looking at the payload. The payload is the actual threat. It's actually the code of what's trying to steal the data. So with that, as we're watching the payload, we are able to analyze each payload as it comes through. And the analyst, as they get through, and by the way, you're probably asking, well, how long does it take for an analyst to look at a threat that comes through? On average, about 15 seconds. Because all they're doing is right-clicking, they're seeing the signature and the information, and they know where it is. It's code red, you know, block it. Or if all of a sudden there's a new server in China that's now just hitting the heck out of us, our clients, to just block that IP address. We can actually go in a little deeper and look at incident severity. A lot of folks enjoy the reporting because they are able to report back up to the vantage measure of how well they're protecting the network, where they're actually blocking. You have a question?
No, I'm saying, yeah, I mean, that's all they want to see, graphs, charts.
If they want to know, and again, because of the Sarbanes, because of the HIPAA, because of the word called accountability, they want to know what's going on. They want to understand, are they being attacked? If so, how are we as a company mitigating that risk? Destination ports, destination IP addresses, you know, the severity, how often they're happening, when they happen. We keep a log of all this information. We'll actually go for a 12-month period of time. So we'll keep all this activity, all this history online within the device itself. Here's your one right here. Shell code. Another report that gives you the attacks, severity, or the number of attacks there on the top 20 events. I don't really need to say anything on these, do I? I mean, you can see the source IP map. I don't know why, so I guess.
This one is compromised because there's outside traffic already.
Right. South Korea. And again, what we do is we typically walk into an environment where they understand the threat. They do have a firewall in place, they have AV, they have spam filtering. But they're still not sure, they're not in compliance with one of the regulations. We'll go in line, and as soon as we go in line, it takes about 2 weeks when we go in line to work with you to figure out what's false positive and what's real. And then once that goes in place, it's funny, because when we work with a partner, okay, we go for the same thing, because they have so many host compliance as well. And the partner, the last one we met in line with here just recently, was something like 3,000 hits per hour. And
filtered it out, we got all the false positives out, and finally peered it back, we were down to 60 an hour. It's more manageable. The first round, they said, okay, we've got it all cleaned up, because they had servers internally that were compromised. Not their servers, customer servers that were compromised internally. And the last thing that you want to do is go to a client and say, your server's been compromised in our data center. Not that it might not have been their job, because maybe you didn't subscribe to that level of protection. Want to see me log into the analyst suite, or there are some events today?
I actually didn't log in. There's a chance to log in.
I was logged in earlier. Started taking the goods.
You go back to that last slide.
This one here?
The one before that one, I just showed it. Had the word inside in large letters. That's what it called mine. I'm going to show my ignorance. I'm, besides the fellow up there in the Xenos hat, I may be the only person here that's not in the IT industry. And he may be for all I know.
This one here?
Yeah, that one.
Okay.
On a job like. I guess on a breach like TJ Maxx, where in large part was due to kiosks being on the corporate network and USB ports being unprotected and
shared.
I mean, that kind of security breach or unawareness, I guess I should sound like the right term, but with something like this, I mean, this was brought online there, this would show that outgoing traffic and
Absolutely. And think about, in this good scenario you talk about, think about a university, how, you know, tenfold, 100-fold magnitude of all the peer-to-peer stuff that's out there. Okay. Obviously, the data within DJ Maxx was more confidential, was their value. The short answer is yes. We can also write a customized signature that will recognize with a high degree of accuracy that will actually watch to make sure credit card numbers don't go out or social security numbers don't go out. Clients will actually ask us to employ that, or we're watching for that kind of information. But the short answer is, if there's someone that's in the within the company that has an infected machine, yes, we'll detect it immediately. Immediately, that signature will come back in, and I'll log in here right now. And then what I'm looking at there is just a report. Incident, priority, counting, the device, the queue, the event, and the time of sitting in the queue. And the analyst, when they come in, the analyst at this point We have three analysts on the committee. They don't show these two see the impact. But those are coming in live right now. Okay. And I can view the incident. Looking at here is an incident handling policy. If it was some severity, if it had a higher level of severity, which I don't have any right now, it would show in red. There we go. Signature. I can run it over to Stuart, see what Stuart says about it. Okay. So we'll link them back into that. Again, I'm the analyst, so I'm not going to know every single one. I'm going to know the serious, significant ones, but I'm not going to know each individual. But what I'll do is I'll come here because of Stuart and Leading Edge. I'll come through and understand the severity of it. Typically, our analysts know most of them. I'm going to say, but I'm told about 90% of them when they come in. Description, in-base buffer overflow, and Netscape, the security service. And if you're interested, you can dive into it even further. Our customers don't see this, what I'm showing you here, our analysts here. What our customers see is what I showed you back on the other page, all the reports that you can drill into. Now, it will tell you the event ID, it will tell you the type of attack, you know, bloodworm or whatever it was, stormworm. It will tell you exactly what it is to report back on. So from an auditing perspective, you'll have that at your fingertips. Get post information, see right there, network info, so I won't expand on that. But you know, I can go down into trusted IPs, local IPs, traditional pings, the who is, networking tools, any notes that are in here. There's a lot of information, and you know, I gotta be careful how much I go into it. But I just wanted to give you a quick view on what the analysts see as those are coming in. Anyone have any questions? I'm probably out of time.
How does the system work if the communications get severed between the managed system and the system that's installed locally?
You mean the solution in the box, if you will, is installed into your network. We've got a VPN, direct VPN connection. We're constantly doing ping downs on it. So if we get an alert status, which I just saw one a little bit earlier, of a client that had a ping down. What typically happens, a client didn't even think about it, shifted something in the network, right? The next thing you know, we can't ping it, we can't see it. So we immediately call. Well, that's invaluable in itself. Because what if it wasn't you? You were at home sleeping at 2 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden we were unable to receive alerts. We're doing the ping down, we're gonna call you at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, we got a ping down, we can't hit the box. Okay. You're gonna proceed and follow through what you need to follow through with to see what's going on.
Did I answer your question?
The unit of your box still works.
Our box still works.
It's doing all its automated stuff. It's just not sending off.
We no longer see what's going on.
But it means queued up where when the service comes back on,
it'll send everything else. Yes, absolutely. And we'll capture up to a full year of history on the box. So that's a good question.
What's the size factor for all of you?
No, believe it or not, little tiny boxes. Four port. There's the engineer is telling me, don't tell anybody there's zero latency because you just never know what's going to hit you. At this point, we have not run into anybody significant enough to see latency, except for one incident where the guy was relieved from his job. We were in line as a firewall as well as the IPS, and they're pushing a bunch of OSHA videos, training their clients that subscribe to the OSHA services training for compliance. And they found out what this gentleman was doing and causing a problem, relieved him of his job. And at this point, I just saw we went back in line, but as IDPS only, not as a firewall, because they're being a little cautious of us going back in as a firewall. Where we're probably not the best fit is his spam eradication. If you have something that's already there, spam filtering, if you already have something in place, or if you have an expensive firewall solution in place. Are we just as good as the other firewall? I'd like to think we're better because, again, it's not so much just the hardware technology, it's the analysts that are back in the security operations center. So, are you limited into how often you can call them? Absolutely not. You can call the security operations center right now. They're never going to answer the phone. They're going to answer a question. And that is where our reward comes in, because once we have a client in place, typically they're there for life. This last year we lost four clients. Three of them went to bankruptcy.
So I think you wish them the security denial service. Just your wish that a DDoS attack.
Yeah, absolutely. We know about it immediately. Gone.
I mean, it's it tells you that the move all the attack inside, probably just IP. I guess if it's
Well, there's a signature for the DDoS, right? So there's a signature. We'll see that immediately. And based upon the profile that is set for that client, we know how to react to it. And typically, if all of a sudden we see this little bit of history starting to come through with over 2 hours, we know there's a new storm coming through, and we start blocking that. We'll do a global block for all our clients. So now, none of our clients. Now, that has to be absolute. We have to be absolutely sure that we know and understand what that is. And that goes back to the analysts. Some of these guys are scary to me. They live and breathe this stuff. And they can sit here and talk all day long about the latest thing that they've seen out there and how it's working and how cool it is,
The advantage you guys have is that you have literally real-time monitoring of what's happening on the internet, and you can you're deep enough that you can see what's evolving and take real action as opposed to some mechanized
real-time action. Now, what we're not doing is we're not blocking content. So if someone gets in and all of a sudden starts sending stuff out, we notice it. You might have lost a few records there. A few social security numbers have gone out the door. There's other technologies out there that you can subscribe to that are content blocking. Okay, that's more CPU, more resource intensive. When you go to that level, some companies employ that as well. Because still, when we're talking about IDPS and the content blocking, again, part of that layered structure.
you're probably more in this area of IDS, so you have 95%.
Correct.
You use some firewall, you use a lot of things, but you're really good at IDS.
Really good at the IDS. And in a firewall, I mean, what is a firewall? You know, and how good is the firewall? It's, well, it's how good your signature updates are. Our signature updates on both, on I say the box itself, happen at 4 a.m. And we don't need to reboot the box. We update our signatures. As opposed to other technologies out there in the IDS sector, you know, a firewall.
Do you have anything that's host-based in terms of intrusion detection or strictly network-based?
Strictly network-based. We haven't really seen the need for host-based because it goes back to consumed resources. So if we can stop it in the front or in the back, do we have to be on the application layer? I guess there's application products that are out there that can do that.
So your system sits basically behind the switch, first tier behind the switch,
correct,
or after the firewall.
Right. Because you're taking the brunt with the firewall, unless we're the firewall. Again, we can't be the firewall. But 99% of folks that we speak with already have that firewall in place. I can hang off a span board.
So it's still, even at that point, you prevent the information from getting into the network, but it does nothing to prevent the denial of service on the switches until somebody inputs like a block of water gateway.
Correct.
You're absolutely right. Well, I mean, it'd be more likely to overwhelm your ISP than this box, probably, unless your ISP has something in place. So if someone's hitting your public IP with a DDoS, you got, probably thousands of hits, 500 hits, mostly SIM packets or something going in.
Like I said, DMZ as well. And in this case, Medion is avoided. Medion has the security solution in place today. And if you want to know firsthand, I really recommend that you speak with Terry about it.
I mean, anyone who gets in here is going to be protected by this automatically or something?
No, because we're protecting Medion's core network. We go by segment versus a global. So if a new client comes online, they would subscribe as part of the total network security solution. So if you're subscribing to firewall, maybe Medion has a firewall solution that they're providing for you. You're only going to subscribe to the IDPS. And that comes with your package.
So in that sense, it's almost a hosted type thing.
Because I guarantee at that point, we'd realize some latency issues.
Is there an appliance in here, but then you host your website?
Or we can do it at the customer site, so we're just doing it on that.
Correct.
Is it good for the appliance?
The appliance itself sits in line so that all the data passes through the appliance physically. Or is it promiscuous?
It's promiscuous. In other words, it is sitting there watching and pulling the information as it goes by. So I'm not actually a risk or a liability. So I mentioned you can hang off a stand or you can put a, what's it called, a tap? Network tap? What is it? Even this tap, to where you sit back there as well, you can see a not that technical recall information. But no, we're not a single point of failure. That's what we're looking at.
How do you block traffic if all traffic's not going through you? I mean, how do you, if you recognize the signatures, how are you discarding packets?
I don't know the answer. I don't know how they're doing that.
Yeah, because I'm thinking if you're discarding stuff, you have to be in line.
You've got to be the firewall, so.
Not necessarily the firewall.
You've got to be between the firewall and the switch.
Yes.
You have to be in line.
Yeah, you have to be in mind, because if you're in promiscuous mode, because I've stuck it sitting in promiscuous mode right now, and it just sits out on the network, it just watches the
It'll give you good reporting data.
You know that all your innovation thing hacked all your
data. Which would be close to single point.
What you shared with me is we're not the single point of failure to the point where we're not in line to be a threat to cause latency.
You know, we're sitting on the seven laws of distributed computing. Latency is zero. It's one of the fallacies. Bandwidth is infinite. Topology. Topology doesn't change. So that white paper, most downloaded paper on networking. Yeah, so there's always latency. Yeah. Always. You can't, there's no way to avoid it. It's just anything that's in the way, anything access to resistance. So, yeah, that's all right. I mean, it could be the same sort of effect. I mean, I call it the dead VCR effect, right? So if you have a VCR plugged in, there you go. Some laws of distributed computing are in there? The dead VCR, essentially your VCR dies, but your cable goes through your VCR. So you still have to watch TV, so there could be something.
I'll be happy to find the answer out and share it with you.
I'm just curious.
That's what I think what you're saying though is this box is fast enough processor wise is why you do an appliance on a hosted solution. But if you get a DDoS hit this box, you've got enough processing power to handle that little packet. I mean, Yahoo got hit with something that was just took them over. At some level, it's large enough, this thing probably wouldn't handle it.
A little bring down the paper.
Yeah,
you mentioned earlier about the university that probably came up on that list. That was probably DR, Gloria State University here in Columbia, again, for the second time. Apparently, they lost another computer with 8,000 social security. That only happened, twice in the last year. So.
Not the one that came up on my list.
No, I was just talking about on the list of people
that cyber has to disclose it.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
It's interesting, there was a university on our list as a client, but again, I have to be real careful and not talk about every one of our clients, but there was a university that showed up in here pretty quick. I walked into their office, it's going to be about 4 weeks ago, and I walked in the office, and they're fine. And as I walk in, and I was completely caught off guard, and I asked how everything was going, because they asked to have a meeting with us. And they said everything was going fine. And when I went in, he says, I can't believe what's going on. And of course, my heart's starting to race a little bit because I think I'm walking into a flying game. And before we even sit down, he says, if I weren't so stupid and would have deployed another box in our other canvas segment, we wouldn't be dealing with the situation that we're dealing with right now. Apparently, they too were hacked in their secondary facility, where they didn't have us employed in that segment. So needless to say, they were very happy with us and what we provide to the point where they should have had it on the other way. It's just a matter of other priorities that came up before they got to it. Of course, at that point, it was too late. They lost the information.
Do you eat your own dog food?
Yes, absolutely. Matter of fact, well, this one I was walked into was one of our own. Not only what you would see, you would see probably about 50 of them out there, not just from an R&D, but probably about 10 of those in production. We absolutely use it. Medion uses it. I can name a bunch of other that they use it. And it's not part of a requirement to sign up with us as a partner. Not a requirement at all. It's in one. The only way that Medion will allow us to come in is by putting the device in a test mode, if you will, to allow Terry and the other folks here at Medion to understand what its feature functionality, capabilities are in order to put it in the data center. And again, don't take my word for it. Rebecca can put you in touch with Terry if you don't know Terry. Terry can just speak with you firsthand. On why he appreciates that device being in line. So, and again, I barely, because I can't speak to some of the technical, you know, one technical question you asked, which I'll find that answer out. But I can certainly speak to customer references, partner references that are actually using it to align.
It's probably a heck of a lot cheaper than a full-time security person.
Well, it's you know, how many times?
And it doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't take breaks.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning for hours at night. It allows you to go home and sleep at night. Now, believe it or not, once upon a time, I worked in a data center, but I was project-specific in the healthcare environment. You know, I can tell you, I was pulled out on Thanksgiving evening. My family was not happy. But the system had gone down, and guess what? People are still dying during Thanksgiving dinner. Medical records couldn't be processed. Patient information couldn't get accessed. And being on this project, I had to rush in to get the system back up. So, point being is, to your point, is you have to go home and sleep at night. You have to go home and be with your family. By the way, when we go to sleep, who wakes up? Where do they live?
Well, you have a Russian network going on.
We've got a
Russian network.
Brazil.
Yeah.
Free copy of Windows. Take one for your friends.
You mean I just can't download it?
Yep.
And I have a business card for anybody that, you know, wants my email address or, you know, my TV or car information, so I can answer back. And she can answer Rebecca as well, so she can pass it along.
I'm going to have a VMware client know I
can. I think it's the best question I've heard all night.
Just create one.
Terry right now is in line for a project to go through evaluation stage right now to offer virtual clients. We have been running it for 2 years. We just never productized it. Interesting what you kind of, in fact, all of what you've seen tonight came out of the of a need being a hosting company. As the company has evolved or changed their clothing, if you will, saw a need to fit this market. That's where Protect One came out of.
It worked really evolving. Getting wider and wider, and it's harder and harder to keep up with it unless you're more specialized in that. And each company like yours is like, where it's trying to hire somebody off the street to do the same thing.
What's that insanity trap? You said that Albert Einstein, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Mm-hmm. Well, imagine that problem with accounting, which you're talking about. I can't keep up with it as it is today because something new is changing. But if you have specialized people that fix your car that's made in Asia or made in America, it doesn't matter. I can't get in the hood of my car. Except
four people that are running the show, running for
you. Yeah, I can download the documents. You know, I know where to get the documents for my vehicle, but that doesn't mean I'm qualified to try to repair it. Yeah, it's just the world we live in.
You're ever trying to remediate a log file, like a firewall log file? I try to go pull my keys out. God bless these guys who do everything. It's
cool.
I'm a sales guy, come on.
No, but seriously, yeah, that's true. I mean, if you do the same thing over and over again, then you expect a different result.
You'll
drive yourself insane.
Yeah, you better. always said, so you think Wendo somehow was able to package their virus and share it publicly, you know, sell it to
people. You just made some points up there.
It's a virus in a box. I use it only because my company said I have to jam. When it comes to security, though, that's like my buddy's redneck firewall.
Thank you very much.
Rings in.
Well, I guess since I started making this in this chart, we're in. Thank you.